This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike, and I'd like to say a quick but heartfelt thanks to Alexandra Guyard, star of LFP 039, for his recent generous donation to support the London FinTech Podcast. May Alexandra, InvestGlass, and the Swiss FinTech Association go from strength to strength. And now, why the IF ISA promises to be such a transformational force in the P2P industry. Hi, this is Mike Ballaman, and this is London FinTech Podcast, episode 47, and I'm delighted to welcome Jake Womwell-Povey, co-founder and CEO of Goji, to dive into the fascinating subject of the Innovative Finance ISA. The IF ISA might be unknown off these shores, but here it's generated plenty of excitement in the P2P community. Goji was founded in February 2015 with the aspiration to take P2P lending into new investor markets. They are starting by offering a white label IF ISA solution to existing platforms. In terms of what an ISA is, basically, UK taxpayers have been able to shelter a small amount of investment money every year from tax forever, income or capital gains. It was introduced way back in 1986 by Nigel Lawson under Margaret Thatcher's government to encourage wider equity ownership. In those days, it was called a PEP. Over the past 30 years, the whole thing has got more complicated and changed its name from PEP to an ISA. But the principle of money away from the taxman remains. The current limit is £15,000 per annum. In the fintech emergence year of 2014, George Osborne announced in his budget that ISA eligibility would be extended to include P2P loans. In the 2015 budget, it was confirmed that from 6th of April 2016, lenders will be able to hold P2P assets in an IF ISA. Since then, there's been much work on clarifying where we are, and perhaps preparations are not all entirely in place even a few weeks before the start line, as we will hear. If all this sounds very abstract, the excitement stems from the fact that each year it has been estimated that in the UK approximately £50 billion is invested in ISAs. And you can imagine how keen the platforms are to get their paws on a percentage of that. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Hi Jake, thanks for joining me today.
Hi Mike, thanks for having me on the show and thanks for coming into Goji HQ to go through it all.
So I see on LinkedIn that you list your interests as, quotes, the usual. But you do mention supporting Liverpool. I'm not entirely sure that's usual. And also in terms of your usual interests, you don't actually mention sex, drugs and rock and roll.
No, not at all.
So they aren't your interests, never mind. Oh.
No, although before we moved into the world of fintech, I actually used to run nightclubs up in Manchester, which, you know, you could argue probably wasn't a million miles away or back in the day up there. And now here we are down in London, doing fintech and just moving out of an accountancy firm. So I'm not quite sure how we took that road, but we are where we are.
So you've probably rather overdosed on the sex, drugs and rock and roll in terms of doing nightclubs in Manchester. So moving on from certain off-piste activities to the far more fascinating journey that's taken you through consultancy into an independent lifestyle or an independent business here. And I think there is some similarity between nightclubs. I mean, if a nightclub's not successful, it doesn't thrive and doesn't carry on. And the same with fintechs, having just come from, as I was mentioning to you, a presentation about what regulators are doing about culture in banks, where they're starting to regulate culture. It's a very different world in old FS these days than the new FS. So what led you from Manchester through your professional journey into fintechdom today?
I think it was both the realisation that you can't carry on, you know, just having a bit of a laugh on Friday and Saturday night, running nightclubs and they're thinking, oh, this is fantastic.
Wait till you get to my age, sunshine. You have to sort of put a laugh in the diary for 3 months hence.
Well, life kind of gets in the way, doesn't it? And you realise, actually, we need to get out a real job. And I dare say my parents whispering in my ears all constantly, more or less, that when are you going to get a real job?
When are you going to get a real job?
Well, I'm still not quite sure. And I still, can still keep telling them I'm still not quite sure.
Don't worry, I'm not sure myself either.
Hopefully never, but we'll see. So I took a job at an accountancy firm and was there for the best part of 6 years working in their financial services group and worked with some fantastic companies there, from the huge down to, you know, some of the really small, some of them peer-to-peer platforms when they were pre-revenue, helping them with fundraising and regulatory reviews. And that naturally sort of led me to an interest in fintech and peer-to-peer, and then decided January last year that there was a certain gap in the market, and actually, you know, we probably knew a few people who could help. We got some expertise, got some contacts, and we took the jump.
Well, it's interesting because on the previous show, I was talking to Hiroki Takeuchi from GoCardless, who's another 20-something fintech founder. Although I think you'd love to catch him up because he's doing $1 billion per annum.
Yeah, I would like to.
$1 billion per annum would be quite a nice start for you guys. And he'd been at McKinsey's, and a bit like yourself, the one thing that I'm seeing is that of the fintechs that are doing well, certainly the ones that are coming from the fin angle, people in them have quite often got professional services backgrounds in them. And what he'd said he'd learned from that was, I mean, I'm putting words into his mouth, but basically dotting I's and crossing T's and getting things right in a disciplined fashion, which is very important to fin.
Yeah, and I wouldn't disagree with that. I'm not saying it's the only way by any means, but certainly we look at the type of work we were doing in, when it's things like M&As and big IPOs, there are huge projects that would take months and months and months. And it was all about working with loads of different stakeholders, different advisors, etc., bringing all that together, focusing on the goal. And I suppose starting up a business isn't dissimilar to that. Same when you're running the business, it's saying, like, what's the short, medium-term goals? And as you say, there's a huge amount of, I suppose, external from you pressure to perform and get things right with this in the eyes of clients, superiors. So that does lead itself, I suppose, to sort of operating in a high-paced and high-challenge professional environment. So notwithstanding the fact it's been obviously a bit of a dramatic change, stepping from one world into the next.
Yes, I can see that. I mean, I was focusing on the commonality, really. I mean, this will come on to later. I think you'd mentioned that the legislation or the rules or whatever it is around the IFI, so it's 300 pages long. And it takes quite a mentality to read 300 pages and not make any mistakes.
Yeah, I remember actually going on holiday, and one of the guys we're on holiday with said, "What are you doing on your iPad? I just cannot tell you.
I'm reading the IFI rules."
And he thought I was doing something on untoward or whatever. I was on the iPad, and I said, "Well, no, just a bit embarrassed to tell you. I'm actually going through HMRC documents here and wading through what's now sort of close to or just over 300 pages." But yeah, it's certainly not a task you can take lightly. But equally, if you're going to pertain to know that stuff, you need to know it top to bottom, not just a couple of pages of it.
Yes, absolutely. And this is why fintech is not like tech, because you still need your tech bit on it, as do almost all companies these days, but the fin bit is incredibly challenging. Well, we'll come on to Goji at the end, but clearly one of the advantages for people using your white label solution, or maybe a different way of looking at it, is basically a back office solution for them, is that you have read the 300 pages, so they don't have to read the 300 pages, which is a huge advantage to people who are busy in the day job. So diving into this, so is it IFISA or IFISA or...
Oh, you see it spelt differently, different acronyms, etc., all over the place, but yeah, for want of the better word, the innovative finance ISA, to give it its full name in all its glory. But
yes, they didn't have too many branding consultants on that one, did they?
Well, no, it was going to be called the Lending ISA.
The LISA?
Yeah, the LISA, yeah. And I think it's just basically left the door open, so if they do want to put in equities, crowdfunded equities, for example, if they want to put in debt-based securities, you know, certainly signs from Treasury that they are going to look to include those. So it's I think they've called it that to keep it a relatively broad church.
Yes, and I can see the advantage in terms of having a dedicated pot where all this newfangled stuff is put in and keeping it separate from, what is it now, cash ISAs and equity ISAs.
And help to buy ISAs. And I think now the government's just announced a scheme in the budget as of an hour or two ago around the lifetime ISA, which may be a cash ISA under a different form, but yeah, they're...
proliferating.
Yeah, certainly pushing it. I'm sure the Office of Tax Simplification is having a field day with all these new schemes and products coming out.
Yeah, I think they probably shot themselves a long time ago. So, well, let's get into the IFISA. I've given the big picture about what it is. We've just spoken about it, but without going through all of the 300 pages of it, what does an IFISA constitute, and how does somebody do one, and how would someone invest in one?
So the IFISA is your, as you mentioned earlier, tax-free allowance that enables you to invest £15,240 onto a peer-to-peer platform and not pay any income tax on the income that you earn. Again, very similar to how a stocks and shares ISA operates and a cash ISA, if people are familiar with those. What it does then, what it means, is it is for the peer-to-peer lending sector, it's suddenly this government-imbued mark of credibility that we're going to put a tax wrap around this. We think it's good for you to put your money into it. It's obviously going to boost returns for the investors that go in there. It's going to be a fantastic PR tool for the industry to go around. And equally, it's just going to raise the profile with more sceptical groups, like maybe IFAs, who are saying, "I'm not quite sure yet what this means, what the benefit is." The government's just announced, as of about an hour and a half ago, as we're recording this, that they're going to increase the limit to £20,000 from next April. So suddenly you've got £20,000, which you can either spread across one of these three ISAs, a bit in each one, or you put all into your innovative finance ISA. So for an investor now, and equally for platforms with those investors, that's a pretty enviable sort of product to have on your repertoire, have on your website.
Yes, it hadn't particularly passed through my, what I shall call, for want of a better word, my mind, that the fact that the government is doing this is actually a governmental stamp of approval on P2P and marketplace lending. Put another way, it would be incredibly embarrassing for the government and the Treasury if in a year's time, say, a P2P or marketplace lender blew up inside an ISA. So that actually has a whole bunch of implications about how closely the Treasury, via its arm at the FCA, will be keeping a track of the industry to make sure it doesn't go off the rails.
Yeah, and that is exactly why there's been a lot of political pressure to get platforms through the FCA authorisation in time for the new tax year that starts on April the 6th. If the government had come out and said, here's the big kind of tax wrapper we're going to give you, here's the big sort of tip of the spear for you to go and charge into the retail investment market with, but actually you can't do it yet because the FCA is still caught in a backlog, I'm not sure how well that would have gone down.
So update me then, because the last article I read by Ryan from Altfire News, the best source for these things, was that the FCA hadn't actually at the time regulated anybody, and it'd been, quotes, too busy to put case officers on the case in many cases, which, as they all had to fill in forms by the end of September, I was a little bit surprised by, because that's roughly 4.5 months ago, and not assigning case officers seemed a bit strange. So maybe I got the wrong end of the stick, but I thought that actually nobody was regulated yet by the FCA.
So I may get the numbers out very slightly, but there were six platforms that were already regulated, some of them by virtue of the fact that they'd gone for sort of equity and debt permissions and kind of gone through ahead of this big wave of pure peer-to-peer lenders that were under interims. There's now been, I suppose, rumours, for want of a better word, so feedback to consultants, advisors, etc., that some platforms will get through ahead of April. We're yet to see if that's the case. There have also been a number of platforms that have received letters suggesting actually these business models are a little bit more complex than we thought. They're different from both our understanding and also they're different from each other. So this is going to take a little bit longer than we initially thought. We do need to do this properly. And I think the thing that everyone has to appreciate is that if they rush them through on one hand, then actually on the other hand, don't be surprised when a whopping great big, you know, thematic or market review comes 18 months down the line. So I think for, you know, ultimately the end investor, it's very important that the FCA takes its time, does this properly. But equally, that's not to say, you know, it should dawdle or just hold it up wantonly. And I don't think they are. I think you've got to remember when the OFT moved regulation of consumer credit businesses, which peer-to-peer platforms are considered of, that overnight doubled the FCA's sort of supervisory remit. And actually to authorise all those platforms was always going to take a very long time. So they've had a mammoth task, and you know, we can quibble over whether it's taken an extra month longer than thought. It's obviously been a Herculean effort to get the head around all that.
Exactly. And there are lots of leadership challenges at the FCA. And again, for overseas listeners, the previous head of the FCA was not rolled over last summer, and then I think it was just before Christmas, it was announced the acting head won't be rolled over. So they've got some challenges there. And coming back to the devil being in the detail, in all fairness, the FCA, they've got some challenges as well in terms of, so what does this mean then? And the one that I'd spotted was the phrase around collective investment scheme, where they'd asked the Treasury to define it. And it was something crazy, like the Treasury says, oh, well, if you're regulating it, it's not collective investment scheme, which is basically, in my terms, like a unit trust or investment trust. But that's kind of catch 22 for them, because they're not regulating at the moment, therefore it is. But if they regulate it tomorrow, then it isn't. And this stuff needs to be threshed through. And for those people for whom this isn't obvious, I think that that's kind of a dog whistle or whatever the phrase is, talking about, for example, rate setter, where essentially you put your money on the platform, you get a wholesale rate, and you actually don't see the investments behind it. So as Christian Faye from LendInvest said about 18 months ago on the podcast, didn't mention rate setter, but there are models which look more like, shall we say, a unit trust, where you just put it in, versus the opposite extreme, the kind of pure marketplace where you've got funding circle, and you know, you put your money in one asset or 100 assets, and you know precisely which assets they are. So there's some quite complicated things to be worked through here. I hadn't particularly realised that the political pressure on the FCA has actually gone up considerably as a result of the ISA, because the Treasury and the Conservative Party won't be happy if the FCA are seen to have not done something they should have done, and one of the platforms falls over. So on the ISA managers then, so an ISA is, as you say, it's a tax wrapper. And so, for example, in the past, I bought ISAs from Legal & General, UK Index Tracker Fund in equities. So I call Legal & General and they say, oh, yes. And I say, can I have one of those, please? And they say, yes. And ask me 1,000 questions for half an hour because they have to. So let's take a Zopa or a Rate Setter or a Goji. So if I'm trying to buy one of these ISAs in 3 months' time and it has been regulated, how will I actually physically do it? I mean, who is the manager?
So as things currently stand, although it's important just to add the legislation, even at this very late point in the day, is still draft. So we are less than a month away and no one's quite yet seen the final letter from the lawyers at Treasury or HMRC. But as it stands, the ISA manager will be the peer-to-peer lending platform. So the investors will go to peer-to-peer lending platforms, as they always have done up until now, and they will now be able to invest tax-free, although I imagine in exactly the same way they always have done. So for them, it's probably going to be a very, very simple proposition to investors. It's to say, right, do what you've done for the last 4 or 5 or almost 9 years with, or sorry, 10 years with Zopa, but now you just get the returns tax-free.
Okay, so the thing that I'd seen about this was, and all this is kind of in the peripheral vision over the period, and it keeps changing, which is why we need experts such as yourself, Jake. But I'd seen something, originally there was a challenge around that who owned the assets. So if I go to LNG, for the sake of argument, they're kind of a principal, and you know, one part of it takes my phone call and gets my ISA money and gives it to another part of LNG who sticks it into a bunch of shares to simulate the FTSE All Share. When you're coming to peer-to-peers, they are generally set up as agents. So in the purest case, something like Funding Circle, I give them my money. It goes through Funding Circle to a lender, borrower. So is that good at finance? I am. Which one's a lender? It goes through to a borrower and that is my asset. If, let's take the Funding Circle case, if then I'm giving my money to Funding Circle as an ISA provider, well, actually, they're the principal to my transaction, aren't they? So how's that going to work then?
No, so it's not going to be the same setup for the innovative finance ISA as it will be for the stocks and shares. So in stocks and shares, they'll often use a nominee structure, and that's for a number of regulatory and logistical reasons. But with the innovative finance ISA, the idea being, as it currently stands, that you go to the peer-to-peer lending platform, they now have ISA management permissions, you do exactly what you did before. Now, however, there are a load of obligations on the peer-to-peer platform to report to the tax man to manage the movement of that wrapper should an investor want to take it from a peer-to-peer lending platform to another one, etc. So the investor won't see much difference at all. The platform won't necessarily see a difference to their cash flows. What the platform will see a difference to is all the administration, reporting, some of the compliance that other ISA managers have to do.
Okay, so maybe we can drill into the word wrapper, because that's the one that's always used, and it's quite useful having these abstractions. But what the bloody hell's a wrapper?
Very good question. And, you know, the wrap, the concept of the wrap, I think gained a lot of notoriety when there were, you know, wrap platforms now where you had your pension on. But actually, I think as the words evolved, the distribution of these products has evolved. The tax wrapper now is simply the pot of money or the funds that you have, and it's shielded from tax, which I think are the words that you used earlier. It's a much better way of putting it. So you have your pension wrapper, you have your ISA wrapper, and it simply means that you've wrapped sort of this tax-free allowance around those funds, and they've been sheltered from either income tax or capital gains tax.
So my asset, let's just say I bung 15 grand into one corporate loan, which is clearly not a good thing, but anyway, I do that, say, via Funding Circle, and if I did it directly, that's my asset. And what you're telling me, or what I'm hearing, rightly or wrongly, is that if I do that via Innovative Finance ISA, I've still got that asset, but there's this protocol around it which shields it.
Absolutely. And then it's the platform's obligation, responsibility to go and tell the tax man that there's a wrapper here, it belongs to that investor, they're within all the conditions of the wrapper, and manage that sort of compliance. So in essence, the Treasury's got a couple of objectives here. One is to protect that brand, which is why they've been very careful about calling it a new type of ISA, but equally to make sure there isn't any investor detriment, or probably most crucially, there isn't any tax evasion or avoidance.
Okay, so then we start to get in the complicated things, which means that it's taken some time in consultation and in design and in dotting the I's and crossing the T's, which is where we are now. So you mentioned an interesting concept there, which is that I've got my ISA, I bung my 15 grand through Funding Circle, if they have one, in a month's time, into an asset, and then a bit later I change my mind. going back to the previous PEPs and ISAs, the government, of course, was very keen on transferability or portability or whatever, which is one day I got fed up with legal in general. I wasn't going to be stuck with it for the rest of my life. I could, as it were, move the money to another provider in a fairly complex way, no doubt. So how does that work in the case of P2P, in particular as the assets are quite illiquid? So, for example, with a stocks and shares ISA, if I've got 15 grand in BP through one ISA provider, as I understand it, I can call another ISA provider and say, oh, will you take my 15 grand's worth of BP? They say, oh, yes. And they take, quote unquote, the 15 grand and they just put it in their wrapper. Whereas, let's say I've got one into Funding Circle, and in a year's time I go, ah, I don't want that. I want Zopa. I'll call Zopa and say, can you take my 15 grand of a D loan through Funding Circle? And the answer is no.
Yeah, the difference there really comes down to that nominee structure we'd spoken about before. So whereas before you could, you know, buy, sell, you could transfer in specie and you just simply, you know, sell the same BP share but send it to another ISA manager. I don't think Zopa's going to be particularly open to managing Funding Circle's loans, for example. So the process for the investor is exactly the same. They will go to a new peer-to-peer lender and they say, I would like you to transfer my tax wrapper, that tax shield that I have with another provider, to you because I prefer you as a platform, whatever the reasons may be. And then it's up to the two ISA managers to manage that process. And so what it will mean is, and there's obviously challenges around this because peer-to-peer is loans and not a liquid asset. Somehow the investor and the platform have to liquidate or realize the cash out of those loans. Once that is liquidated or realized, they have 30 days then to transfer it to the new provider. So I don't think anyone in the industry, as far as I'm aware, is saying, don't worry, we'll do this in an easy access fashion. You've got 30 days. I think the warning signs are going to be flashing pretty brightly to say, yes, by all means transfer, but we'll do it on a best endeavours basis and we can't guarantee your money will be out overnight and off you go to your new manager. So investors have absolutely still got to be aware, especially if they're new to peer-to-peer, what the risks are there and what the challenges are compared to the other ISA brands and products that they know very well.
So it fits into the category quite well, which is that there's the IFISA stuff in terms of technicalities and all that, which is interesting in itself. But actually, why I think it's of interesting more to the sort of broader conversation around P2P and alternative finance is there's all the knock-on repercussions. And I think one of the repercussions that you're clearly talking about there is that we can imagine that in 1, 2, 3 years' time, there's going to be much more focus on liquidity of P2P assets and the cost of liquidating them. So far, there's been a rising tide, so the tide is coming in. So actually, if anybody needs to liquidate it, there's always somebody to buy it and there's a small fee on the platform. But the tides go in and tides go out. So if at some point in time you're trying to liquidate it, you may find out in the future what an illiquid asset really means, which is you can't sell this D loan on Funding Circle.
And I think one of the interesting phenomena we're going to see out of the ISA when it comes to peer-to-peer lending is that suddenly you're going to have demand and supply that before were challenging enough to balance for these, you know, these new finance providers operating in a brand new sector. But now we've got the phenomenon whereby the supply of cash, certainly from the retail investment side, is going to be highly seasonal. It's all going to come in either at the end or the beginning of that tax year. Whereas I dare say the borrower side, the demand for that capital is going to be relatively steady over the year. So peer-to-peer platforms really are going to have to get their head around, you know, how they manage that increased liquidity, certainly at the time when there's high levels of ISA activity at the back end and right at the start of the tax years.
Yes, and the context of that for overseas listeners is that, surprise, surprise, with these tax structures, most people, I'm in this first group, most people get near the end of the year and go, oh my God, I haven't done something, and they do something late in March. Yeah. And smarter, sensible people, probably like yourself, go into the new year and go, oh, it's a new year, I'll do it now. So it's not done through the year. And certainly a year ago, there was lots of sort of P2Ps wetting themselves over this and going, oh my God, I'm going to get 5 billion in next April. Well, good luck. You know, I think it will start slowly given all of these sort of hiccups were talking about, but as you say, it presents a significant challenge as to what do they do, or more to the point, they will all take the money and it will sit on some call account earning not very much, and then you'll get articles in the Daily Mail in 6 months' time saying, I put my 15 grand into so-and-so, and so-and-so still hasn't invested any of it 6 months later, because they, as you say, they can't suddenly originate a whole bunch of assets.
And I think existing peer-to-peer investors will appreciate what's going on. But I think the real challenge, therefore, for the platforms is that when they are dealing with new investors who are brand new into the industry and have been attracted by this ISA banner, that they manage that user experience and they do make them aware of some of these challenges and they make it very clear that this is not like a cash ISA where it's in one day, the interest is getting earned straight away and off you pop and there's no consequences. There are challenges and there are logistics for investors and platforms to navigate.
So there's an investor education thing there. And I think one of the things we hadn't touched on, but it's implicit in what we're talking about, which is that these IFISAs are single platform.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to take my allocation as I am at the moment and say stick 10 with Legal & General and 5 with, I don't know, Fidelity or something like that. You've got to bung the whole lot. Or the subset of the 15 grand. I can put 10 into Legal & General and 5 into an IFISA, can I?
Yeah, so with the ISAs, you have the £15,240 for this tax year, and you can split that across either three or soon be four, so cash, stocks, shares, innovative finance, help to buy, etc. However, you could only have one of each. So investors, next tax year, so on April the 6th, have to elect, I'm going to put my innovative finance ISA this year with that provider. There's a little nuance around that, which is that they can, in fact, transfer prior years ISA savings to a different provider. However, the challenge there, and we see this, you know, with the advent of recent trends in the investment space and certainly a lot of fintech platforms that are priding themselves on digital experience and user experience, usability. I very much doubt that investors, as you mentioned earlier, they're not as pragmatic as they might be. They're not going to sit there and say, well, on the 6th of April, I'll put all my pot in and then I'll, you know, reallocate and all of my prior years and really, really sensibly and pragmatically put some on each platform. I dare say they'll put their innovative finance ISA on one platform, and when they transfer prior year, button pops up on the interface, they'll click, yeah, thank you very much. And it'll be a real kind of winner-take-all scenario.
Yes, I mean, one of the things that didn't happen, which was mooted, was that the logical thing to do from one perspective would be to allow people to diversify. So for the sake of argument, I wouldn't want to put all of my money onto one platform. I'd rather stick, you know, for the sake of argument, £3,000 in the top, each of the top five to spread my risk of the platform. So if a platform blows up for some unforeseen reason, then I've got the rest. But presumably it just wasn't possible to make that happen.
Well, it's still under consideration by Treasury. We haven't seen anything final come out. We don't know when and we don't know exactly what form. But it's certainly something they're open to because I think, as most people accept, one of the golden rules of investing is diversification. And I think the industry has actually got this wrong at the moment with how they've lobbied it and certainly Treasury as it currently stands, because you are inducing or setting the environment up so investors are going to be forced down to putting all their eggs into one basket. And I know the common retort there from peer-to-peer platforms is that, well, you can diversify across hundreds of loans. And that may well be the case, but if you even look at an investor when they put their money into shares or equities, what they're saying there is, says, all right, I'm going to go into the UK tracker funds, okay, and that's across hundreds of equities, and I'm going to get some emerging markets exposure, and I'm going to get some property, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't really think that stacks up, because if you do go onto one platform and it's, say, all SME or all consumer or all property, you are still heavily exposed there to certain elements of the UK economy.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, apart from Zopa, they're all slightly born yesterday. And like most people who are born yesterday, they haven't lived long enough to see all sorts of things going wrong. You know, we've just seen a trust buddy. I have no idea what might have happened in a year's time, you know. And once you've got sufficient track record in any new industry, whether it's hedge funds or whether it's gold funds or unit trust started in the 70s, after a while, you know what kind of cock-ups happen and how it happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in the short term, it would be much better if I, for the sake of argument, could stick £3,000 in the top five platforms. I'd sleep much easier than I'd sort of going, oh my God, which one do I put it on? Which comes back to a whole story in itself. And this is something I've been banging on for 12 months about. How on earth do investors ascertain what the risk is in these platforms? And at the moment, there is no simple, clear information, for the sake of argument, investor comparing Zopa versus RateSetter versus Funding Circle. I'll take those three names because they're the best known. So moving on from the sort of challenges and how it's working at the moment, this is going to keep evolving. What do you see the future of the IFISA being, Jake?
Well, I'm hopeful that Treasury will open up the distribution of ISAs, make it actually in line with SIPs, SIPs pensions, self-invested personal pensions that already operate in this space, and allow third-party managers, and I won't make any bones about it, Goji wants to be one of those, to enable investors to invest across multiple platforms. We think that does give all the classic investment rules and advice people give around diversification, platform dependency. So I think that's going to be certainly a development there. And equally, I think that coupled with or either on its own will make a big impact on the other forms or other distribution channels for certainly investing in peer-to-peer lending. So we've seen, for example, the retail investment market, whether it's advised or on sort of execution only platforms, being hesitant to enter the sector. That's for a number of reasons. You know, we mentioned before about, you know, there hasn't been through a cycle yet and people want to see a proven track record there, you know, not an academic track record. They'll want to know that there's a sort of uniform level of due diligence, and actually there are people looking at these platforms, so independent third parties that really understand one from the other, that can quantify the risk. And I think a lot of the advisors looking in, whether they're IFAs, wealth managers, the investment platforms themselves, will really want to know, right, we're going to put a pound on here, and what is the underlying risks to this? Not necessarily it's a certain interest rate, you know, but they'll want to be much more transparent, because you've got to remember that for investment platforms that are used to investing in equities, and that might then sit in a fund structure, you know, the funds are very, very transparent in that, right, here's the net asset value of the fund. We're all in these sort of equities, specifically these equities. We're going to define that our investment mandate is 5% here, 25% there. And all that will flow through in a very transparent fashion. And I'm not sure that that expectation will be satisfied by the current market as it sits in the peer-to-peer lending sector.
Exactly. And if you've got your money invested in equities, there's a price every day. You can measure the volatility, how the volatility is changing. That gives you some idea of how it might change in the future. You've got clear stress testing, how the market's crapped out in the past and how it might in the future. So again, it's very interesting how this knocks on into the whole P2P market from something, which is just a way of doing tax. I suspect in the short term, what you might be seeing is that the people who are investing in P2Ps at the moment will continue doing so, but obviously they'll just bung it through the ISA first of all. The industry as a whole has had a problem in terms of diversifying the range of people who are investing into ISAs. They've tended to get more money from the same people. And I think it would be something like, for the sake of argument, you know, in a year's time, let's say Goji is allowed to, and you're doing this multiple IF ISA, and I'd much rather stick 15 grand through somebody like yourself and put 3 grand into each of them for the obvious diversification of platform as well as assets within platforms. So time's going by. Do you want to wave the flag a little bit for Goji? Because I know there's lots of interesting things going on.
Yeah, we're growing rapidly. And I say that not necessarily in terms of, you know, revenue and things like that. Yeah, we are. The team's growing rapidly. We're launching as of the 6th of April. Clients signed up now. We're going to be putting the ISA out for them on their behalf, the white label solution. We, like the rest of the industry, are all sitting here genuinely on the edge of the great unknown. We have no idea what that uptake's going to be. We don't know whether it's going to be a flood in on April the 6th. So we're on the one hand extremely excited, on the other hand, you know, really sitting there quite scared, thinking, I hope we've got all these predictions and sums of all the hard work's going to pay off. But yeah, it's been a fantastic journey, and we've got a great team together there. So our head of technology was, I think, number 3 employee at Monetize, and built that up from being 3 of them back in the day to sort of over 500 and worth 1.6 billion on the stock exchange. And the rest of the team are all from the ISA space, retail investment space, trading platform space, so Lloyds, Banking Group, IG, Worldpay. So it's been great, really, just bringing all those people together. But equally, it's been a fascinating journey in that it's been dynamic. I think if people had looked at me and said, you must be barking mad, you're going to try and build a product or build a company in an extremely volatile regulatory environment where you don't know whether there's going to be a multi-platform tax wrapper here or whether the SIP space is going to work for you. The retail investment platforms as they currently sit are probably waiting for one of these tax wrappers to go in place. There's plenty going in the right direction for us to sort of underpin our success. We obviously just have to make sure that we're prepared and that we're building the platform in a structured way so that it kind of all adds up to that end goal of being able to take peer-to-peer lending into new investor markets. And I think the biggest testament to that is we just closed our seed round for £400,000, and then we'll be starting the Series A to really build the big bulk of that platform capability, you know, over the coming months. So it's been a whirlwind journey. The ultimate validation obviously has been from our clients and getting those on board. We're pleased to say, you know, we've got a number that are signed up, also got some very promising conversations. So we're looking forward to cementing that position as the innovative finance expert that works with a number of different platforms across the industry. And then it's all about growing from there. So what can we do with SIPs? What can we do with IFAs? What can we do with investment platforms? How can we help to shape that regulatory environment for the benefit of investors and peer-to-peer lenders? But yeah, I think the biggest word of caution there really for us is about making sure we're managing that regulatory environment and we're not charging for long into the great unknown with absolutely no way back. So would like to think of that being on the cutting edge there, but we'll only find out when we say we're on the right side of it.
Yes, it's interesting times. I mean, the fact that it's, you know, you're going where angels fear to tread is the competitive advantage, because if angels didn't fear to tread there, you'd have much more company trying to do it. And I think, you know, the one of the ironies about how you're positioned, listeners will know that one of my favourite fintechs is Currency Cloud. You will next to never read about Currency Cloud in the newspapers, because they're the sort of back end of the payment / FX. But most of the names that you will read about in the payments and FX world wouldn't exist if Currency Cloud was there. And the same thing will apply to Goji. You know, you're unlikely to read about Goji on the front page of the Telegraph or even the personal finance section. But again, a number of folks who are going to end up investing in P2P ISAs via well-known names will actually be using, you know, under the bottom layer, powered by Goji.
Yeah, no, we'd love to see that there. I don't think it actually ever will be there. It will always be that kind of middleware. You know, we've got grand aspirations about the billions that will be flowing through the platform onto peer-to-peer lending platforms. But our mantra is pretty simple here. You know, we want to build trusted relationships here with great platforms that are innovating and pushing that space. But equally with their innovation, obviously they need to focus on the areas of the business that are critical to them. And there's this huge investment landscape here with huge complexity and nuances around it. You know, we mentioned earlier about SIPs, ISAs, obviously collective investment schemes. And we want to occupy that space and help the peer-to-peer lending platforms by sort of cracking all of those nuances and challenges so they can focus on being, you know, incredible lending businesses with great underwriting capabilities.
Good. Well, I think that's been very interesting, very helpful for me. I think the thing that I'm much clearer about than when we started the conversation is this sort of twofold nature of this FISA. The one, the technical nature and what it is and what you can do. But the second, the knock-on impacts, the pressures it's going to put on the industry as a whole to actually start improving its game in some areas where there's been no particular pressure to do something so far. I mean, risk being notably one of them. So I wish you every success in the future. And thanks for that, Jake.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes or your podcast app, or sign up at londonfintechpodcast.com for email alerts and new episodes. Live long and prosper.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. To come away from the city, the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. Come away from the city, but with the faces so gray, with the pain of the everyday. We are wild like the mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye, wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. City goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me. 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 Watch the firelight.